Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B1 de inglés. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2022 para población escolar. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícelas según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. No escriba en los recuadros sombreados, son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to the actress Penelope Cruz talking about one of her films. Match extracts 1 to 6 to the corresponding questions A to I. There are 2 extra questions that you do not need. Extract 0 is given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Extract 0. Example.
My character is Laura, a Spanish woman who has been living in Argentina for the last 18 years and sometimes going back and forth to visit the family. She has had 2 children in Argentina with an Argentinian man, and they go back to Spain to the little village where their mother, the father and sisters are. She goes back to visit them because one of the sisters is getting married, and she goes back with her 2 children.
Extract 1.
Well, it's only my 2nd movie working together, being a couple, no? So, but the first movie that I did with him was when I was 17 years old, and that was the movie that really started our careers, you know, for both of us, Jamón Jamón. So it's a good experience to work together, to do it once in a while. It's not something that we plan to do every year or every 2 years.
Extract 2.
All of them were very, very, very complex. So when I started the shooting with very difficult scenes, and then we had a little break to shoot the wedding section. So that was like a relief for me of, you know, shooting 3 or 4 days full of joy and hope and freedom and celebration. And after those 4 days, it was back to the drama until the end of the shooting, like for another 3 months.
Extract 3.
It was a very good experience to make the movie because Asghar is such a genius, and you know, with all these wonderful actors and actresses, and I look back and I see it as a very positive experience to make this film, but at the same time I was very ready to finish after 4 months of shooting. You know, it was a very, very intense character. I learned a lot working with Asghar.
Extract 4.
No, Asghar is you know, a director that has this special quality of doing an X-ray of human feelings, human behavior, and almost like an homage of the complexity of human relationships and how far from perfect we all are. And what I love it is that he does it in a way where he doesn't judge any of the characters.
Extract 5.
They were in a relationship many years before. And of course the movie makes you feel like there's still something there that is not completely resolved between them. And there is a very specific thing. There is a very specific scene in the movie that explains what is still not resolved between them. A lot of big things.
Extract 6.
Well, for me, I really never want to give up the experience of watching a movie in the big screen. The ritual of being there, your phone is off, there's not going to be an interruption, you're going to go into that adventure, into that trip, into that story, and really enjoy that experience.
Now listen again. Extract 0. Example.
My character is Laura, a Spanish woman who has been living in Argentina for the last 18 years and sometimes going back and forth to visit the family. She has had 2 children in Argentina with an Argentinian man. And they go back to Spain, to the little village where their mother, the father and sisters are. And she goes back to visit them because one of the sisters is getting married, and she goes back with her 2 children.
Extract 1.
Well, it's only my second movie working together, being a couple, no? So, but the first movie that I did with him was when I was 17 years old, and that was the movie that really started our careers, you know, for both of us, Jamón Jamón. So it's a good experience to work together, to do it once in a while. It's not something that we plan to do every year or every 2 years.
Extract 2.
All of them were very, very, very complex. So when I started the shooting with very difficult scenes, and then we had a little break to shoot the wedding section. So that was like a relief for me of, you know, shooting 3 or 4 days full of joy and hope and freedom and celebration. And after those 4 days, it was back to the drama until the end of the shooting, like for another 3 months.
Extract 3.
It was a very good experience to make the movie because Asghar is such a genius, and you know, with all these wonderful actors and actresses, and I look back and I see it as a very positive experience to make this film, but at the same time I was very ready to finish after 4 months of shooting. You know, it was a very, very intense character. I learned a lot working with Asghar.
Extract 4.
No, it's Asghar is, you know, a director that has this special quality of doing an X-ray of human feelings, human behavior, and almost like an homage of the complexity of human relationships and how far from perfect we all are. And what I love it is that he does it in a way where he doesn't judge any of the characters.
Extract 5.
They were in a relationship many years before. And of course, the movie makes you feel like there's still something there that is not completely resolved between them. And there is a very specific thing. There is a very specific scene in the movie that explains what is still not resolved between them. A lot of big things.
Extract 6.
Well, for me, I really never want to give up the experience of watching a movie in the big screen. The ritual of being there, your phone is off, there's not going to be an interruption, you're going to go into that adventure, into that trip, into that story, and really enjoy that experience.
This is the end of task 1. Now turn to task 2. Task 2. Listen to a documentary about witchcraft. For questions 1 to 9, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. Question 0 has been given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the questions.
Written records of witches stretch as far back as ancient Greece and Rome. But it was in early modern Europe that the idea of a witch as an evil old woman became common among Christians. People at this time believed they lived in a world of invisible spirits, such as demons, angels, and saints, as well as magical objects and materials. The most powerful people in society were very concerned with witches. King James I even wrote a book all about them. Women and sometimes men were accused of being witches. They were thought to use their magical powers for harm and were said to have made a pact with the devil. Witches in England were often thought to have familiars, small animals that accompanied them everywhere. The witch looked after the familiar, and in return it would help them with their magic. Familiars were often depicted as black cats, but could also be rats, dogs, ferrets, birds, frogs, or rabbits. If someone was accused of being a witch, they might be subjected to a swimming trial. They were stripped of their clothes, had their thumbs tied to their toes, and were thrown into a river or a lake. If they sank, they were declared innocent and usually rescued. If they floated, they were judged to be a witch. Witchcraft was made an official crime in England in 1542. Most of the people arrested were poor elderly women. In 1566, Agnes Waterhouse became the first person in England to be executed for witchcraft after she was accused of being a witch by her sister Elizabeth. It is thought that around 500 people in England were executed for witchcraft. Records exist for about 12,500 executions across Europe, although the true death toll is likely to be far higher. In England, people found guilty of witchcraft were hanged. In Scotland, they were tied to a wooden pole and burned. Despite all these deaths, people still worried about witches. Some engraved or burned letters and shapes into wooden beams and doorways to protect themselves against fire and witchcraft. They used special objects too. Today, people repairing old houses often find strange things hidden inside chimneys or under doorways. These include witch bottles, filled with things like metal nails, thorns, urine, human hair, and nail clippings. People also hid shoes, clothes, knives, and animal hearts stuck with pins, which were thought to stop witches and other spirits from entering the house. So why were people so afraid of witches? Well, at the time when most witch trials in England took place, the country was rife with war, sickness, plague, and conflict about religious beliefs. The weather also became much colder at this time, in a period known as the Little Ice Age.
Now listen again.
Written records of witches stretch as far back as ancient Greece and Rome. But it was in early modern Europe that the idea of a witch as an evil old woman became common among Christians. People at this time believed they lived in a world of invisible spirits, such as demons, angels, and saints, as well as magical objects and materials. The most powerful people in society were very concerned with witches. King James I even wrote a book all about them. Women and sometimes men were accused of being witches. They were thought to use their magical powers for harm and were said to have made a pact with the devil. Witches in England were often thought to have familiars, small animals that accompanied them everywhere. The witch looked after the familiar, and in return it would help them with their magic. Familiars were often depicted as black cats, but could also be rats, dogs, ferrets, birds, frogs, or rabbits. If someone was accused of being a witch, they might be subjected to a swimming trial. They were stripped of their clothes, had their thumbs tied to their toes, and were thrown into a river or a lake. If they sank, they were declared innocent and usually rescued. If they floated, they were judged to be a witch. Witchcraft was made an official crime in England in 1542. Most of the people arrested were poor elderly women. In 1566, Agnes Waterhouse became the first person in England to be executed for witchcraft after she was accused of being a witch by her sister Elizabeth. It is thought that around 500 people in England were executed for witchcraft. Records exist for about 12,500 executions across Europe, although the true death toll is likely to be far higher. In England, people found guilty of witchcraft were hanged. In Scotland, they were tied to a wooden pole and burned. Despite all these deaths, people still worried about witches. Some engraved or burned letters and shapes into wooden beams and doorways to protect themselves against fire and witchcraft. They used special objects too. Today, people repairing old houses often find strange things hidden inside chimneys or under doorways. These include witch bottles, filled with things like metal nails, thorns, urine, human hair, and nail clippings. People also hid shoes, clothes, knives, and animal hearts stuck with pins, which were thought to stop witches and other spirits from entering the house. So why were people so afraid of witches? Well, at the time when most witch trials in England took place, the country was rife with war, sickness, plague, and conflict about religious beliefs. The weather also became much colder at this time, in a period known as the Little Ice Age.
This is the end of task two. Now turn to task three. Task three. Listen to someone talking about the late scientist Stephen Hawking and decide if the sentences 1 to 10 are true or false, according to what you hear. Sentence 0 has been given as an example. You have 1 minute to read the sentences.
Stephen Hawking grew up in a family of well-educated people. Both of his parents had college degrees, so education was very important. But Stephen was never a brilliant student. He was not able to read properly until he was 8. And despite his average performance in school, there was something about him that teachers recognized. They knew there was a hidden genius deep inside. He was never very interested in school. He was more fascinated in what was happening outside and spent most of his time inventing new things. While in school, Stephen was nicknamed Einstein. When Stephen was 17, he went to Oxford University to study physics and chemistry, and believe it or not, while at university, Stephen was incredibly lazy and had barely worked for an hour a day. He found his first year very boring. I'm not proud of this, I'm just describing my attitude at the time, which I shared with most fellow students: boredom and feeling nothing was worth making an effort for. After graduating from Oxford University, he went to Cambridge to further his studies in cosmology. But soon, Stephen started having some strange physical symptoms. His speech started to be slurred, he was clumsy, he would often trip and fall, and at first he wasn't paying much attention. But his condition was getting worse rapidly. In the meantime, he met his future wife, Jane. But after making a series of tests, it was diagnosed that he was in the early stages of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. The part of his brain responsible for muscle control was shutting down. This disease gradually paralyzes people, and over time they struggle to walk, talk, swallow, and even breathe without help. And Stephen had only 2 years left to live. When the doctors told him he didn't have much time left, at only 21, something shifted inside of him. Faced with the possibility of dying, Stephen was motivated to make a difference and not be lazy and waste any more precious time. So he dedicated his entire life on his work. He became even more optimistic and married Jane. And they soon had 3 children. When faced with the possibility of an early death, it makes you realize that life is worth living. And there are lots of things you want to do. It is a waste of time to be angry about my disability. One has to get on with life, and I haven't done badly. People won't have time for you if you're always angry or complaining. He became one of the most recognizable, unique, and admired scientists of all time. His incredible work on black holes and the origin of the universe changed the way we think about science. His most famous book, A Brief History of Time, was sold more than 10 million copies. Stephen Hawking is one of the most inspirational people in the world. He had an incredible determination and burning desire to live. He didn't let his illness stand in the way. No matter how hard life was, and no matter how impossible or unachievable something was, giving up was never an option. Despite all odds, he proved his doctors wrong, miraculously living more than 55 years after his diagnosis. He died at the age of 76.
Now listen again.
Stephen Hawking grew up in a family of well-educated people. Both of his parents had college degrees, so education was very important. But Stephen was never a brilliant student. He was not able to read properly until he was 8. And despite his average performance in school, there was something about him that teachers recognized. They knew there was a hidden genius deep inside. He was never very interested in school. He was more fascinated in what was happening outside and spent most of his time inventing new things. While in school, Stephen was nicknamed Einstein. When Stephen was 17, he went to Oxford University to study physics and chemistry, and believe it or not, while at university, Stephen was incredibly lazy and had barely worked for an hour a day. He found his first year very boring. I'm not proud of this, I'm just describing my attitude at the time, which I shared with most fellow students: boredom and feeling nothing was worth making an effort for. After graduating from Oxford University, he went to Cambridge to further his studies in cosmology. But soon, Stephen started having some strange physical symptoms. His speech started to be slurred, he was clumsy, he would often trip and fall, and at first he wasn't paying much attention. But his condition was getting worse rapidly. In the meantime, he met his future wife, Jane. But after making a series of tests, it was diagnosed that he was in the early stages of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. The part of his brain responsible for muscle control was shutting down. This disease gradually paralyzes people, and over time they struggle to walk, talk, swallow, and even breathe without help. And Stephen had only 2 years left to live. When the doctors told him he didn't have much time left, at only 21, something shifted inside of him. Faced with the possibility of dying, Stephen was motivated to make a difference and not be lazy and waste any more precious time. So he dedicated his entire life on his work. He became even more optimistic and married Jane. And they soon had 3 children. When faced with the possibility of an early death, it makes you realize that life is worth living. And there are lots of things you want to do. It is a waste of time to be angry about my disability. One has to get on with life, and I haven't done badly. People won't have time for you if you're always angry or complaining. He became one of the most recognizable, unique, and admired scientists of all time. His incredible work on black holes and the origin of the universe changed the way we think about science. His most famous book, A Brief History of Time, was sold more than 10 million copies. Stephen Hawking is one of the most inspirational people in the world. He had an incredible determination and burning desire to live. He didn't let his illness stand in the way. No matter how hard life was, and no matter how impossible or unachievable something was, giving up was never an option. Despite all odds, he proved his doctors wrong, miraculously living more than 55 years after his diagnosis. He died at the age of 76.
This is the end of task 3 and the end of the listening test.